Welcome back to the National Links Trust podcast. This is the fifth and final episode in our 2023 Symposium on Municipal Golf series. In this episode, you'll be listening to a recording of the Partnerships and Community Engagement panel. Azucena Maldonado, founder of the Latina Golfers Association, moderates this discussion. She's joined by NLT's own Andrew Zunyog, as well as Dave Andrews and Maria Stroop. This group brings with them diverse backgrounds in the golf and nonprofit space, and that resulted in a fantastic conversation. Thanks to all of them for joining us at the symposium. Let's get right into the episode.
I am excited to be here at part of this afternoon's panel, especially because our discussion will center on a topic that I feel very passionate about and one that I feel is closely tied to the success of municipal golf courses throughout the country. So we're going to talk about how to build partnerships with local community, educational, environmental, and economic groups and organizations. And as a growing number of our municipal courses face closure challenges, the importance of conducting outreach and partnerships with community and elected officials is critical. So at the symposium, we've had discussions on the elements it takes to create and maintain golf courses. Well, throughout the past 2 days, I've heard many panelists mention in their remarks the importance of having advocates, not only at city council, but in community, and the importance of stakeholder engagement. So at the culmination of this symposium, it's appropriate that our panel is going to dive into the heart and soul of golf course, and that is community. I mean, don't we agree that without community, without people, we don't have a golf course? So our panelists and our individuals that live and breathe community engagement, and we'll elaborate on how these kinds of partnerships have resulted in creating programs that take a holistic approach to bridging community and golf. And not only are we going to learn about their amazing projects, but they'll give us pragmatic advice and examples on how we can do this in our own communities. So let's meet our panelists. Maria Stroop joined the Cobbs Creek Foundation's team in the summer of 2021 as the Senior Vice President of Education, Social Responsibility, and Community Engagement at the Cobbs Creek Foundation, a group of Philadelphia residents who are community, civic, and business leaders seeking to provide ongoing opportunities for the surrounding neighborhoods by restoring the historic Cobbs Creek Golf Course. Maria is a fierce advocate for young people and has devoted her personal and professional life to empowering and inspiring students in both educational and faith-based settings for over 35 years. Her leadership role in the West Philadelphia Cobbs Creek area has now merged with the Tiger Woods Foundation to join their leadership team as their Director of Early Education and Community Engagement. Maria is a graduate of Flagler College in St. Augustine, Florida, with a BA in Youth Ministry and psychology, and she later graduated from Princeton Theological Seminary with a master's in divinity. Welcome, Maria. Dave Andrews currently serves as the director of Path at the Park West Palm. He has an undergraduate and graduate degree in sport management from Indiana University in Pennsylvania. Dave spent 14 years serving 4 YMCA associations in Pennsylvania, Florida, New York City, and Atlanta. And during his career with the YMCA, Dave was able to support the needs of the local communities while breaking barriers and building bridges for the next generation. Additionally, Dave has served as a sport management adjunct for over 10 years. Now, Dave believes his purpose is to serve the most disconnected kids in the community through his passion to grow the game of golf. Hi, Dave. And our next panelist is someone who needs no introduction in this room. Andrew Zunyog, or what is it that people call you?
Well, my last name means mosquito. Oh, so I was like, okay. If you couldn't say, you could just say Andrew Mosquito.
I almost said it like that. Andrew. So Andrew is the Sustainability and Community Engagement Project Manager for National Links Trust. His role as a sustainability strategist and community builder for the NLT stems from his 20 years of working in the golf industry and a passion to showcase the value that municipal golf courses can provide to the communities where the game lives. I love that. Andrew is also the co-founder of Driving the Green, a golf sustainability website and mastermind group dedicated to building a more sustainable, equitable, and prosperous golf and sports industry. So we're going to explore and learn from three very successful projects: Cobbs Creek in Philadelphia, Path at the Northwest Palm in Florida, and the National Links Trust. So, Andrew, congratulations on a successful symposium. Hasn't it been amazing? We've met so many amazing people. Thank you for all being here. I heard many people say yesterday that this symposium is an example of community engagement. I totally agree with that. And so thank you to the National Links Trust for bringing us together. So National Links Trust is dedicated to positively impacting local communities by protecting and promoting accessible, affordable, and engaging municipal golf courses across the United States of America. So we all know that the NLT has embarked on an extraordinary project here in DC. So please elaborate on that, Andrew.
Excellent. Thank you all for being here and for allowing me to be on the panel. I'm excited to talk about one of the projects. Obviously, the whole thing is a big project, but one of the sub projects that I'm working on is the revitalization of Langston Golf Course. And that's really where kind of the idea of community comes in. One of our biggest community partners across our spectrum is the Anacostia Watershed Society. And raise your hand if you know what a watershed is. Excellent. Look at all those hands. That's wonderful. So Langston Golf Course sits within the Anacostia Watershed Society. And DC is actually one of the only cities, major cities in the country that does not actually have a public water space for people to swim in, whether it be a lake or a river or anything like that. And a lot of that is from pollution and degradation of natural environments due to developments and things like that. And so the Anacostia River is kind of a divider of DC. You know, left, the west side of Anacostia River is a bit more affluent and taken care of. The east side is a bit more forgotten and underserved. And so I sort of like to view the role that I have is, you know, we all know that municipal golf serves, you know, a community through recreational value, right? Providing a place for us to go and play golf. But I like to think of it as, you know, what can it do beyond that? So it's looking at ecological services of what the golf course can do to revitalize habitats. You know, if we're thinking migratory birds or monarch butterflies, or economic development and exposing the game to underrepresented communities through workforce development programs. And I won't go into that too much more because my fellow panelists are doing fantastic work at their foundations. But really what we're trying to do with the Anacostia Watershed Society is support environmental justice initiatives, knowing that if there are decreased recreational opportunities and access to green space and rivers and things like that, what can the golf course do to sort of support those initiatives? And so one of the great things about bringing the Anacostia Watershed Society to the golf course is sort of I get to play host. And the nice thing is for our capacity is we rely on them to do a lot of volunteer recruitment and providing supplies and sort of the capacity. And I sort of provide the habitat and the place for people to come and volunteer their time. And what's really beneficial is a majority of their volunteers are non-golfers who typically come to the course either with a negative perception of what golf is or have just never been to a golf course or ever felt invited. And so for me, that is like gold, right? It's an opportunity to tell the story of what Langston Golf Course is and the history of municipal golf or golf itself, and how it is a pillar of the African-American golf community. And the work that they're doing is revitalizing these habitats by, you know, we're basically taking saws and loppers and hand clippers, and we're taking out invasive vegetation. But what we're doing is revitalizing these habitats, and we're opening up river views. There's a portion of Langston Golf Course that is built on Kingman Island, which is a man-made island that was part of the Army Corps of Engineers dredging of the Anacostia River to try and restore this earlier in the last century. And so the place is just disturbed soils like that are typically ripe for invasive vegetation to take over. And there's portions of the island where you literally have no idea you're on an island because it's just a thick wall of vines and trees. And so a lot of the work that we're doing is trying to clear up those sight lines so people make connections to the other people sharing the space, right? So if a golfer is able to look over and see a group of rowers and canoers going up and down the river, and the canoers are able to see golfers, there's that shared sense of space that you're just not out here on an island on your own, right? There's other people that enjoy this, and that there's a commitment to wanting to make it better for community and society. So, you know, that's really kind of one of the biggest projects that I work on is, you know, revitalizing this habitat. We have maybe 35 acres of invasive vegetation that we're going to have to mitigate over the life of this project. But really it's like, you know, it's like Clay and other people saying it's 1%, getting 1% better each day, right? And helping people to understand these challenges and just being able to come to a golf course and really engage and understand the history of Langston and how, you know, revitalization of this will help clean the river and provide additional recreational opportunities for communities. So,
thank you, Andrew. So, Maria, give us the history behind Cobbs Creek. How did it come about?
I'm sure you're familiar in some way with Cobbs Creek Foundation. I might be the only one that has never golfed in this room. So the irony of me, the staff I work with was laughing that I'm representing the crew in this space, but it goes to show you the power of golf because 1916 is when Cobbs Creek Golf Course came into being. And with that said, what drew me to this project was its rich history of diversity, equity, and inclusion. From the get-go, it welcomed women, Black and brown players to play on its course. And that was when I heard this story, it stunned me because this has been my life work. You know, this is what I have done. I've been in this DEI space my whole professional life, whether it be in urban communities as, you know, a community engagement person with a church or with a school. Philadelphia is it is the biggest poorest city in our country. It has the second hungriest zip code. My work there has always been as a pastor for 7 years, but then I was an educator for 17 years in a high school. And what stunned me is I never heard of Cobbs Creek Golf Course in my entire 25 years prior to bumping into this project. But I'd been in the community all around the golf course for 25 years, literally nonprofits, schools I volunteered in, never noticed this stranded asset. The beauty of this course and the people who are bringing it back to life in very bold ways, and what drew me to this project is 100% of the proceeds from this golf course are going through an educational center that is being built on the property. And I was recruited to join this team to kind of advise and discern what are the community's needs. Listening tour for 2.5 years. We have created programs in response to the community. But the beauty of this project for me that's so inspiring are the group of people who had this vision. And this is like the fourth group of people trying to restore Cobbs Creek's golf course. And now it's in traction. Now it's really happening. And to be a part of this moment as a non-golfer really exemplifies the fact that I see their purpose. I want to be a part of this because the community surrounding it has been overlooked and underrepresented in so many ways. So Cobbs Creek's mission and the foundation's mission has compelled me to spend my career serving alongside this golf course in bold ways. And Charlie Sifford's legacy, I know you have to know who he is, the first Black golfer to break the glass ceiling, if you will, of Black golfers and winning the PGA Tour and changing the PGA Tour's Caucasian only clause, you know, and to be a part of that and to remind this community that he is the Jackie Robinson of golf and that they have a hero that they did not know about, to be in the schools surrounding, handing out Charlie Sifford little children's books at every school so they could know who was not represented, who was not noticed. It's really an honor as an educator to be on this team.
So Maria, you did mention to me about this third iteration of the effort to start this project, but you said now you feel it happened because its purpose is beyond golf. Right. Give us an example of what you do.
What I do, the reason why I had to come in this morning is we run 4 days of tutoring in after-school programs where we have wait lists of kids. We have a maximum of 30 kids, and we are, when you're in a community where the average math proficiency of a fourth grader is between 10 and 14%, and you've listened to the community saying, you know, we are left behind. So we responded in sincere ways and have partnered with colleges, universities, and high schools to provide tutoring programs for the students in the community. We've only piloted in two schools, but we have a wait list of four more schools that are waiting for the programming. We're starting a literacy program in January, a pilot literacy program our math tutoring is second through fourth grade. We're running a literacy program for kindergarten and first graders starting in January in two schools. And again, we have 68 volunteers in our program right now. It is majority volunteer driven, but all with the community lens that I wouldn't have started in first through fourth grade if I had prescribed what this community needed. It was the listening to the schools, paying attention to what I would have started with literacy, but their math proficiency rates are so much lower. They prescribe. And that's what's wrong with community engagement in so many ways. We're not here to help or fix anyone. That is such an arrogant posture of how we join community. We spent a year and a half just listening. We were with a community asking them, what do you need? And the beautiful platform of Cobbs Creek is we have community fests once a month. We have art programs offered to children and their families. We do yoga, trauma-informed yoga. You know, so it's all kinds of entry points. It's not just education. It's offering social emotional programming as well. So those are just a little bit of examples, but literally I love my life. I don't even understand. And it's attached to the golf course. I'm not really sure how that.
And happens. we're going to get her on the golf course sooner or later.
I
promise you.
Years.
That's okay. When the right time is there.
I'm good at putt-putt. I'm very good.
Girl, that's the game right there. Putting. So Dave, I know you have said that passion purpose project, if you have a passion purpose project, you will not fail. You haven't failed. So tell us about Path at the Park West Palm and what makes it so different.
Sure. So very similar to my counterparts, to be in this role, you have to have a passion. Many of you are, and if not all of you, are golf industry experts, and you get up every day knowing what you have to do. You know what the end game is. And when you work in a nonprofit, and when you work in a charity, and you work in a mission-driven organization, you have to have that drive that I'm going to change a life, that I'm going to save somebody from being off or on the path. I'm going to help somebody get back on where they belong. No different than my 14 years in executive roles in the YMCA was I guiding the lives of tomorrow's generation, but now I'm doing it at a golf course. The Park West Palm opened April 17th of this year by our wonderful donor, Mr. Tiger Woods, hitting a tee shot. But it goes much more than a tee shot. It goes much more than a ball in a fairway. It goes more than the people behind the scenes that have been instrumental in making it happening 2, maybe 3 years ago, starting off with Seth Waugh, walking onto the property of a municipal golf course that went under in 2017. Looking at that property that was covered in foxes and raccoons and homelessness all over the property, adjacent to a neighborhood that one would say that it has all the affluence in the world with $30 to $60 million homes at Palm Beach, not West Palm Beach. Seeing that this is a gem of an opportunity that went to a fundraising campaign and raised $55 million in about 2.5 months, to then have an opportunity to present this plan to the city. Fast forward a year and a half later, a team was instrumentally recruited, myself a part of that, to be brought in to come up with the plan. Probably the number one reason why I am here is because of a relationship that I've met in golf. But why I am here sitting today is because I got to be a part of that plan from the beginning that really got to set the entire foundation. Looking at the Park West Palm as more than a golf course that's public, looking at it as an opportunity to have a full education center, looking at an ability to serve the community in ways that, quite frankly, I didn't even know she existed, that somebody else was even doing, that somebody was looking to do something very similar to this. So it's a dream for me to sit here today as the director of the path. The path at the park is we believe in life and as golf, there's a path for everyone. The goal is still the same. The path is different. And we want to help keep you on that path as long as we possibly can. We have built programs that include 4 days a week of tutoring and homework help with paid teachers that is split time with homework help as well as our PGA professionals teaching the game of golf. These are completely complementary. We have 24 spots per school, 3 partner schools, 1 middle school, and 1 high school. We offer educational programs, art, ESOL classes for the family, STEM, and soon to launch a college prep program that is a paid internship that'll be in golf agronomy, golf course operation, food and beverage, and in community programs. These programs will help transcend the next generation of our leaders. We're confident of it, but we get to do it at a golf course. And most importantly, we're breaking down the barriers. There's so many barriers in the game of golf, from the elitist mindset to what you can and can't do, what you can and can't wear, the proverbialness that belongs in this game. We want to break that down and introduce the game of golf to people that have never experienced it before, and we will change the generation of tomorrow.
I love it. Andrew, you have something to say?
Yeah, I mean, that touches exactly to like the point of bringing non-golfers through these volunteer events to the course is like, you know, changing those perceptions of golf's accessibility, supporting these environmental justice initiatives to clean water and you know, bring back environmental opportunity or recreational opportunities for people. And, you know, sharing historical significance of people, you know, the history of the golf course and why it exists and why it needs to continue to exist and why it deserves investment because of the potential it has to change lives and opportunities.
Absolutely. I live in Los Angeles, so our municipal golf courses are very challenged, you know, water, space, housing. And our leaders often say in golf, one in particular, Jorge, who was here last year, will say, you know, it's the 90% of people that don't play golf are the ones we need to speak to, because they're the ones that are going to help support our projects and save our municipal golf courses. Wow, these are amazing projects. All three of your projects are just something else. I mean, I dream about participating or having that kind of funding, number one, that kind of team behind you. But do we have to have this kind of money? I mean, tell me your budget, Maria.
Oh, gosh. We're grant funded. We have no revenue at this point. So we've written foundations and got grant funding in for early education money. Now that Tiger Woods Foundation, that was not an iteration until 6 months ago. That merger, for the first 2.5 years, we were looking at best practices, not rebuilding or doing something, you know, taking folks who are in certain lanes and bring them into a building space, whether it be Mighty Writers, if they can run reading programs Tuesdays and Thursdays and a math program. So our budget was more based on grants. It was very, very slim in beautiful ways. Now with Tiger Woods Foundation joining this, Charlie Sifford was like a grandfather to him. This is his passion project. And with that said, he is all in to this project. And he does not, his program, if you guys know anything about it, is a 5th through 12th grade program in Anaheim for 17 years. And it's a STEM-based experience and exposure program that launches two vocational paths or college paths. He has never understood or worked in the space of 1st through 4th grade. And the beautiful thing is he is bringing on our 1st through 4th grade work into his path. He calls it Pathways to Success, his programming. So this is a new iteration. So it's kind of fun to be in a space, and they're nuancing to what the needs. 30% of our programming are prescribed by the community. They're not dropping his program in a building in West Philly. It's still in alignment. So I would imagine, I don't know, I chose not to be the executive director of the Tiger Woods Foundation building because I want to be with the kids. I'm doing the early education work, but I'd imagine it's going to be around $1 million for this upcoming program year, launching year.
So how important is the money? Do we have to have these kinds of budgets in order to create programs like this at our golf courses?
No. So, I mean, money helps. Let's be honest. I listened to the agronomy group before. I know what the equipment costs. It's fascinating to me how this all works, being a person who's not worked in the golf industry. But if you talk to any nonprofit, nonprofits that do the greatest work don't have a $100 million budget. They have a $100,000 budget. Some don't have any budget. When I was hired for this role, I had no budget. I had a zero budget. It did not mean that I didn't have a budget, but they didn't know what the budget was. So for us, the money that we raised minus what it costs to build the property and outfit it with after Gil's done with it, goes into an endowment, and the endowment will then be able to help with capital repairs and improvements, and also for the education, give back to the community for perpetuity. And so that helps, but that's not everything. Because to be honest, once you think you have enough money to build something and to do something, it's always going to cost you more. We opened up a property in April and we had to redo the range, which is $4 million to redo the range. That's going to open up at the end of November, which comes out of that endowment, which is less than what we can do. To be honest, the amount of money that you need to offer these programs to the kids in the community is next to nothing. A conversation I had over maybe 2 months ago with the group at Compton Par 3 as they're launching, they're trying to get that off the ground. And they came to
Los Angeles.
They did. They came to us and asked us with the question, you know, is this because you have access to this money? And the answer is no. This particular project is adjacent, shares a border with an elementary school and a high school. I know there's some first aid groups in the house, and you guys know this very well, but you don't need that. You need a field. You need somebody that knows a little bit about golf. You know, somebody wants to impact the next generation. You don't need to have $1 million budget, a $500,000 budget, or even a $100 budget. You can do it with volunteers. You can build partnerships. You can share space. You can truly impact the community with absolutely $0. And from there, you can create a framework. And then you have a purpose and a case for support that you can go out and get the grants or get the individual donors to get the cause to be able to pull back.
Hey everyone, sorry to interrupt real quick. Just wanted to tell you about ShopNLT.com. ShopNLT.com is National Links Trust's online store that features apparel and accessories that support our mission to positively impact local communities through municipal golf. From November 21st through 27th, we'll also be running our annual holiday sale, so be sure to head over there to give the gift of NLT this holiday season. Now let's get back to the episode.
Andrew, I know you have ideas of how to build that. What does a golf course need to do in order to bring these teams together? What are the elements that a golf course needs to have in place in order to realize projects like this?
We've sort of talked about just taking a measure of the issues around your community, but there's some tools that are very beneficial that sort of exist. And one of them is the EPA's environmental justice. Their environmental justice screens. And essentially what you can do is you plug in your zip code. Let's say it's the zip code for your golf course. It'll show you the economic and health factors affecting the communities around your golf course. And that can honestly tell you what do you need to focus on? How can you provide that assistance for your community? So for us specifically, for Langston, we know that air quality is bad. We know life expectancy is not good. But I know that thanks to the RNA's golf and health report that they released a few years ago, you know, if you hold steady for specific income and other demographic backgrounds, people who play golf live 5 to 6 years longer. And it makes sense, right? Because we're active, we're walking, we're in a green space that typically has cleaner air. The stress levels and the endorphins that are in your body are at a lower level. It's intellectually intriguing. It challenges your mind. And that's the beauty of the game, is sort of what it gives back to the people who play it. And, you know, helping to understand, like, by taking on environmental projects and restoring habitat, I know over time I'm going to help clean that air and the water that's around, right? If I know that education is something that the communities around me struggle with, then being able to reach out and connect with a high school or a middle school, elementary school, and invite them out to the golf course on a STEM education field trip, right? That might be their first exposure to a giant green grass park, and being able to show like the challenges of, you know, litter and stormwater management can, you know, how they affect the golf course, right? One of the challenges we face at Langston is a stormwater drain that empties from the community into one of our streams, deposits when we have heavy rainstorms, brings a lot of trash and debris directly onto the golf course. And so, you know, being able to go out in the community and say, like, this is why it's important for us to take care of our communities, because this is the downstream, you know, thing that happens. So environmental justice screen is one way. With my business partner, Andre Azir, we conducted a materiality assessment with our stakeholders. So essentially we created a survey for internal stakeholders and a survey for external stakeholders. And what we did was we asked them to rank and rate the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals in terms of what they thought was important, right? So some of the goals are clean air and water, life below water, innovation and my mind is blanking, life above water. Anyway, a lot of creating partnerships, right? So by being able to understand what your stakeholders are interested in, let's say the Anacostia Watershed Society is interested in life below water and equity, right? Or women's rights, things like that. Then I know that I can host events with them on the golf course and introduce them to ways to get engaged with the industry. Let's see. Other things are like unique course characteristics, like, you know, environmental features like rivers or lakes and things like that, or even the historical history of your course are ways to interact and find partners. I mean, you host fundraising golf tournaments at your facility all the time, right? Monday events. What do those partners need? Is there a way for you to activate beyond hosting a golf tournament to help them with, you know, gaining traction within their community? So
what about you, David Maria? Do you have ideas on how this will work?
I think, I mean, for me, there's all kinds of, to your point, we have a creek running through Cobbs Creek. Obviously, it's called Cobbs Creek, cleverly named. Having local elementary schools, high schools come onto our space and in non-golfing times, like that's an easy access moment. But to your point, First Tee has run, we have these Saturday programs, and First Tee has come to these Saturday programs and played golf baseball in a gym in the middle of winter. I loved it. I loved First Tee and how they engaged and opened up these kids' first time holding a golf club, you know, at an indoor moment. So it can be, it doesn't even have to involve a green. Like, we don't have a golfing area right now. It's under, you know, restoration, renovation. So you just have to be open to possibilities and connecting with, I went to First Tee, heard all about them, heard about Character Golf, not something I'm familiar with. And then they gave me that idea. So it's really leaning into your community and resources and networking. If you are siloed, you've limited your opportunities. You know, for me, my whole life has been about connecting with the assets that exist. And if you have a deficit mindset, you have narrowed your experience and limited your stakeholders. So for me, it's an easy win on all levels. You can just open up a space. You know, we have community golf people coming right now because we have one hole, one flag, and that we allow them on our property just to golf. Boys Latin School, they don't have any access to golf courses. All the golf courses around them would not allow them to practice. They have one, we have one green space. We have four golfers every day from a local high school coming to golf. Like, that fills my heart up to look out my window and see these young men. And then they came and interned at the tutoring program because they saw me loading up my car for the tutoring program. And now I have these four young men in my car, and they actually look like the kids we're tutoring, which means more to me than me showing up. That these four high school boys are coming with me now tutoring because we allowed them to come golf if they wish. So you'd never know. I would never have thought that moment would have, for me, had more impact than I do tutoring. For them to tutor their peers is a beautiful moment. So you just don't go in with a fixed mindset. Go in with an open heart and an open mind to say, okay, let's talk about all the different ways you can enter into the game of golf.
It really comes back to what you said earlier about listening to the needs of the community. You had a little bit longer to prep, I think, than I did to our opening. So I didn't go a year asking the question of what the needs of the community is to everyone. But I think I probably had the conversation with 50 or 60 different individuals in the West Palm Beach and Palm Beach community to understand what the needs are. Housing was number one. I was in, and as a golf course, very difficult to address housing. Hunger was close to, and we can help that, especially with the hospitality and a food and beverage program. And we work with the local high schools on providing access to a hospitality academy that the kids come over and they learn the back end of how to work in a golf course, how to work in a restaurant. And that's also part of the paid internship program called ACE Academy. But when I took over the program about, you know, perceived perceptions, the board that was formed, and there was some subcommittees as they were developing what would we call the framework or the white page, they developed a strategy that in order to save a life, you just have to give a kid a club. And that's so far away from the truth, because a club actually can't save a life. The impact, the mentorship, the ability for you to give relationship equity to that kid and grow them is how you're going to save a life. Well, they got to have a lifetime sport, a companion, a friend, ability to have trust and have somebody that can look after them. Absolutely. But that club will not do it. And so when I took this role, I actually changed the narrative. And I said, we're going to do it through education. We're going to do it in ways that golf is going to be a part of it, but it won't be the number one. And that's a very unique approach. I think because we see kids and we see golf and like, oh, well, you're the junior golf leader. And that's not the case. We're empowering them. We're figuring out what the needs of the community are. We launched in having these conversations. Our adjacent high school said, we would love to have a golf team. And I said, awesome. We're not doing any charity events or anything of that nature, but let me find out if we can have a golf tournament in our first year or have a host a golf team in our first year. And we met with the principal, and they had two kids that are interested. I said, awesome. They have no clubs. Can you help me find clubs? Absolutely. The first interest meeting was two. At the tryouts, there was 39 kids. 39 kids with three sets of clubs. One set of club had five putters in it, and a TaylorMade R7 was the nicest club in the bag, for those that remember that club. But they had the most amazing time of their life learning the game of golf. And our volunteers for our programs are helping out in ways that they didn't even expect to get from that they've never played the game of golf before in their life. Now they're starting to get involved in how we operate, and also helping them, give them the tools that they need to set them up for the success.
So what does community engagement look like? You've given us some examples. What can it look like, knowing that it's different from golf course to golf course, region to region? What does community engagement look like?
One thing that I haven't said yet, I think you need to support the people's businesses in your community. Every event we have, every meal we give is by a local vendor. The art programs we provide are by people who are nonprofits. We only hire Black-owned businesses in our community, and we support all the community around. We don't go outside for other vendors. So to me, community engagement is being authentic to the community you are in, you know, in relationship with that community, and the pride that this community, I have to be a part of this community and welcomed into this community. Like a young woman came to me, she goes, I can make cake pops. Can you use cake pops in some way? Like, it's yes, of course. And so when it was Teacher Appreciation Week, I had that young woman make cake pops for each of the teachers in every school we're in. So with that said, it's always being in a posture of listening, learning, engaging, being real. Just be real and authentic. Don't prescribe, don't decide, just listen. And then respond, because you're responsible for what you hear. If you don't want to change what you're doing, don't listen. You know, shut it down, because people will tell you every day what they need, what they want. We're just not listening. And offer spaces. We have regular community town halls. That's something so easy in a local school or a local church, in places that are safe for the community members, not on the golf course. You know, I dare you to use your resources, you know, and ask people, what would you dream of? That all our programming, 100% before Tiger Woods got involved, was in response to the community's needs and wants. It was never directed by any of us. And that's my greatest source of pride for the work that we've been doing, is it's the community narrative that drives our goals. So community engagement, listen to the community narrative, and then hire people. Every one of our teams, we've hired an educator, and I wrote a grant for educational ambassadors at all the local schools to join us working with their students, you know, helping us shape our curriculum. So I think hiring is another aspect that we need to be true to. And someone said that in the last panel, which I was like upstairs doing this. So other than that, I'll be quiet.
Yeah. I agree, Maria. I would say listening is what I define for community engagement. Years ago, when I worked for the YMCA, we host movie nights. and flick and floats and different events that were completely free. And all of our programs are free for the kids. Our par three course is free. Kids who want to play the big course, the main course, it's $10 and $20. They get free range buckets. So like we're investing in the kids and the community in every way we possibly can on the golf side. But where I sit in the education side, I want to give them something that they can value, that their parents don't have to find out where they can save this dollar here and there in order to make a fun event for kids. We developed movie nights that are monthly, that we put the movie up aside a green. Agronomy team, don't kill me, but we put it aside a green, and it's free for them to come out. Every Friday, we have Family Fun Friday nights. Our par three and our putting course are under lights. We have a free STEM or an art activity for the kids to come up, and everything at our Cabana Outdoor Bar and Grill for kids is $5 and under. And so we have the ability to comp at our discretion to make sure we know if they're kids that are part of my programs, they eat for free. We want them to know that there's an abundance for them. They don't have to live in this world that they can't have seconds, or they can't be a part of something because what is it going to cost? You have to listen to the needs of the community in order to find out how you can best serve them. It's first importantly, but you have to do it with your posture. You have to do it in a way that no matter everything that we do funnels through in our world, the path, the foundation, everything that we do, can it have an element where kids are a part? Can we make sure that our kids that are being served right now can be a part of this? How is Christmas going to look for them is a question that we had at our last executive meeting. What does Thanksgiving look for them? When's the last time that conversation was had at a normal golf course operator meeting? But you can have it now. You can have it now. You can identify a school, a group, a team, somebody that you can kind of put your arms around and invest in them and what you have. And maybe what you have is an ability to give them an internship and an experience and a piece for their resume that they can take and go from there. Or maybe you could develop something that doesn't going to cost you anything, and you have truly helped them fill that gap and make them feel important.
Both of your projects are in economically challenged communities, seriously economically challenged communities. But I think some of the ideas you just mentioned transcend to all golf courses. Municipal golf courses are everywhere, and they're not only in economically challenged communities. So what can our municipal golf courses anywhere in the country, communities are different, but people are the same. So what are some of the kinds of things, elaborate on what some of the things you talked about that can be done anywhere?
A program that we have, it's a branded program that anybody can partake in. It's called SNAG. SNAG starts for starting new at golf. And SNAG is I would call it a conversation starter. It's tennis balls, a big club head on either a wedge or a putter and a driver. It's played with a tennis ball. We play tennis, we play golf, baseball. We take that to, because of where we are geographically and being owned by the city of West Palm, it has been guided by the city and our lease to serve the city of West Palm first and foremost. However, on the back end of our property, literally on the back of number 8 green, there's a canal that's Lake Worth Beach. So we have a needed area there that's less than a throw away. In order to serve a broader part of West Palm Beach, we can't bring everybody in. We don't have transportation. We won't go into that world. And I'll actually make sure we don't, because of the liability and the driving and everything else. But we require the kids and their parents to be dropped off to the program. Some kids even walk to our programs in the middle school. Our SNAG program is mobile. We wrote a grant this past year to mobilize SNAG so we can serve other populations. But SNAG equipment might cost you $1,000, $400 maybe. We have a whole SNAG course that we bring kids into with 2 inflatables and multiple tees, but you can do that anywhere. We take it to high school programs. We take it to middle school programs. We take it to elementary school programs in their PE. It builds engagement. It bridges a conversation that golf could be fun, but there's so much more to it. And that's, and whether we're not doing it to get somebody involved in the game of golf, we're doing it to just look at it as a way of really changing a kid's life and looking at a sport differently, instead of I'll never be rich enough to play the game of sport. I don't dress in the right clothes to play the sport. Anybody can do this. Anybody's a welcome here.
You all have mentioned grants and from foundations, et cetera. How does a municipal golf course know anything about that? How can a municipal golf course just apply for a grant? Do you have to get a group of friends of the golf course together? Do you have to be a nonprofit? How can we manage what seems to be overwhelming and complicated to think about applying for grants for some of these projects?
I mean, obviously most of the grants kind of spell out like what kind of organization you need to be to apply for it. But I mean, there's grants everywhere. I wrote one last year for the EPA to daylight and restore, daylight a stream and restore a stream at Linkston, and then add in about 10 acres of wetland habitat. And part of that grant process was like, okay, well, how do we intertwine that into the community? So I needed to reach out to the local high school principal and say, we want to host, STEM education field trips out to show the benefits as we're designing and building and showcasing the stream. When it's done, we need help managing it, right? We want to put trash traps on the top, and that's going to need volunteer work and things like that. But, you know, the grants are out there. It really just takes a lot of research and just keeping your ears open and making connections, right? Like, so going back to a lot of, you know, the nonprofits and companies that play at your, or organizations that play your golf course, they are often recipients of grants. So you can open that conversation and ask them, do you know of any opportunities? Are there things that we can do to
partner together?
Partner together. Absolutely. Yeah.
Great.
Thank you for tying that in.
It's all about partnership. Well, also, to elaborate a little bit more on being municipal golf courses all over the country, in Los Angeles, we have, 40 plus probably municipal golf courses, maybe not 40, but almost 40. And one of the things, but as we've talked about before, they're sort of in their own little silos. They are managed, at least for the County of Los Angeles, by management companies. But what we try to educate them about is, because they're municipal golf courses, they really need to take community engagement seriously. It's not something that they automatically think about. I mean, they're running a golf course. You know, they're talking about numbers, how many rounds, employment, keeping staff. However, if you don't make an investment in creating partnerships with the community, it can all go away just like that. So it's not that complicated. You've all mentioned it. There are organizations, chambers of commerce, schools, people that need a place to meet. Let them meet at your golf course. You know, you all have golf tournaments that happen at your golf courses. Find who are the charitable organizations. Have them find out more about your golf course. Do some PR with everybody that walks into your golf course. Really simple things like that. Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, so much of this ties back to the marketing and fundraising, right? Telling that story and really presenting what your goals of your golf course or your organization are. I mean, one of the issues that we have in municipal golf is capacity. We're understaffed. We're, a lot of professionals or staff members are underpaid, and you're working very long hours. Partnerships create capacity, right? The things that we're doing with Anacostia Watershed, we do compensate them for their staff time as they come to help organize the events. But what that does is that builds their own internal capacity that provides them opportunity to hire more staff or to bring on an extra intern or have an extra place to conduct projects. One of the really great things that I'm proud of with our relationship with the Anacostia Watershed Society is, one, they've been working on wild rice restoration within Kingman Lake, which is a tidal embankment inside the golf course that connects to the river. Jorge Bagantes is one of my big partners at the Watershed Society. This has been one of his projects for over 15 years. The Wild Rice 5 years ago was maybe 2 to 3 acres in this giant lake. In the past 3 years, it went from two or five to like 7 acres. Last year we were at 12. This year we're at 23 acres of wild rice. And what that does is that restores that native habitat. We're seeing return of beavers and otters to the golf course that haven't been there in decades. Migratory birds that now have a safe place to come and forage for food, and things like that. Another project is freshwater mussels. Last year we released 3,500 freshwater mussels into Kingman Lake. And you think one little tiny mussel can filter 10 gallons of water a day, right? And so by revitalizing that, and cleaning the water, those mussels are attached to native fish species in their development process. And so by trying to clean the water, you're then revitalizing that fish species population, which then helps the mussel population, right? And so really thinking through like partnerships improve your capacity to get things done. So you're not just out there on your own trying to manage these things. So I don't know.
Well, you know, we're just about at that time. So I would like for each of you to give us some closing remarks, some thoughts that you'd like to share that that we haven't talked about. Maria?
Well, I still don't golf, but what I have appreciated is we don't even have property yet. You know, so many times we wait for something to happen, you know, and it's the now. Don't wait for the great opportunity. For me, maximize, think, go back. I mean, think right now, you know, what is it? What are the things that we have that can make simple gestures that can open up doors for our community that we're in? So for me, I think of your programs. We don't even have a golf, like all these programs you have. I can't wait till we get to that point where we have buildings. We don't have a building. I'm in a trailer. I love it though. I love my trailer. That we don't even have that moment, or just your commenting on the all the environmental space. We're in a really poor area that when it comes to green space, and we are creating an amazing green space, and can we use it for good? Like for me, more than what I can tell you, what I've loved is listening to what's coming for us. We're so early on, and yet so many things are happening already. So you don't have to wait till you have a golf course or a lake or all these things. Whatever you have, use it for the good of the game and for the community around you. I'd inverse that, community around you than the game. But to me, it's just, I love hearing the other panelists. We are so not there. We just have a bulldozer that started picking up some dirt this last week.
Don't be afraid to be a nomad. And don't be afraid to be nimble. In any industry, golf, nonprofit, or business, you end up looking at the what has been done before is what's going to be done in the future. Could you imagine if we're still using the same golf equipment that Ben Hogan did years ago? The game has changed. The equipment has changed. The program should change as well. You need to be a nomad to go after something different, to be great at something different. But don't be afraid to be nimble. The biggest opportunity that we have at the park is our leadership team has developed our entire mission, our strategy, our core values, everything that develops our organization, which many of you will probably never have that opportunity because you're already in an established business. But we committed to ourselves to be nimble. And in any given moment, if I feel that STEM is not the opportunity that we need to do to serve the community, we will guide the ship differently the next week. And instead of trying something until it may not work. So don't be afraid to be a nomad, to try something that nobody has ever done. And don't be afraid to be nimble and be able to pivot and move on a dime.
I mean, for me, as someone who's been a career golf industry professional, and having met and spoken with Maria and Dave and Azucena, you guys come from non-golfing backgrounds, right? And I think that's the key is like we in the golf industry not to need to not stay so inside the industry. We need to outsource and find people with fantastic ideas that have the background in the community engagement and developing education and start there first. You know, we have a real opportunity to really showcase our municipal golf courses as these pillars of communities, right? And really change the perceptions of what we can provide. And it starts with who's on our team and how we're thinking outside of the box. Or I really love the term curiosity, like just be curious, listen, show up, be present and accountable. And that is going to get doors open and it's going to help make your life much easier.
Thanks again to Asusena, Andrew, Maria, and Dave for their time and sharing their expertise in this. This is the final recording from our 2023 Symposium on Municipal Golf series. And if you haven't listened to the others yet, we highly recommend you do. It's available in our podcast feed on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you're looking for more Symposium content, Friday Golf released the closing keynote Q&A with Garrett Morrison and Gil Hance on their podcast, which can also be found on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thanks to everyone who made this year's Symposium possible, and thank you for listening. Stay tuned for more from the National Links Trust podcast.